Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. What can we learn from the pages of young adult literature that holds relevance for politics, for the course of human history, for our individual lives? Today we talk about how books have meaning with William Sewell. He's Associate Professor of English Education and Composition at Dakota State University, and he recently wrote a chapter for the upcoming book, Critical Explorations of Young Adult Literature, Identifying and Critiquing the Canon. Now, he chose to write about The Chocolate War, a 1974 fictional reflection on power, corruption, and psychological warfare that centers on one young man's refusal to participate in his school's chocolate sales. Will Sewell, thanks for being here. We appreciate your time.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
All right, it's been a long time since I've read The Chocolate War. What's the first time that you read this book? And then let's talk a little bit about coming back to it as an adult.
Well, I first read this book a long time ago in the 1990s, and I didn't get the historical connection.
Yeah.
When Robert Cormier wrote the book in the 70s, this was when the Nixon's Watergate was at its zenith. And so there's this atmosphere of we cannot trust our leaders. This is the time period of the Vietnam War, and there's a great turmoil. And so Cormier investigates these problems, but he contextualizes it within the context of a high school. And this young man refuses to sell chocolates. He just doesn't want to participate in this event. And we see how a cruel leader and a cruel society can punish him for not wanting to partake in that activity.
One of the things that strikes me is that today, when we talk about the plot of this book, we might shift it into a bullying category, but it's really a lot more than that. I mean, there's certainly bullying in it, but it really is about a broader sense of control and authority as well.
Yeah, this is a gentleman. This is about a guy who wants to become the leader of a school, and he exploits this very simple fundraising activity that has been around for years, and he exploits it to get a promotion because the headmaster is sick and he's on his way out. And so the assistant headmaster realizes that if he sells enough chocolates, the board would give him a raise, give him a promotion, and then he can take over. And what happens is that he bullies and punishes and extorts everybody in the school to follow suit, and then bad things happen to those who don't support him.
Right. And a fair warning, we might spoil some of this book for you if you've never read it, because one of the things that made it significant at the time, I believe, and that still makes it significant today, which gets at this point more broadly of what children's literature and young adult literature can do, is that there isn't an uplifting, happy ending as we might think would happen in quotations, kids' book.
Yeah, this is a very brutal book, and Robert Cormier doesn't pull any punches. The very first sentence is that they killed him. And from there on out, we see how a brutalizing society can punish a young man who wants to do his own thing. And throughout the process, people come up and brutalize him. At the end of the book, he's not standing on his own two feet, without revealing too much of the story, but you saw it coming. This book is called The Chocolate War, and there's the connections to the Vietnam War. And at this time period, Americans were realizing that this is a war we're not going to win. The economy is souring. The vice president of the United States was literally caught accepting bribes in his White House office, and so he had to resign. And then, of course, Richard Nixon is in his final days of his presidency. And all of those elements percolate in the story. And so when you see the headmaster pushing their buttons to get what he wants, you can see those very vicious connections being made. Mm-hmm. Chocolate War is a very brutal book, and Robert Cormier received a lot of criticism for it. But his argument is that we shouldn't always have stereotypically happy endings. He provides a very pessimistic one, and he does that because he wants young children, young adults, if you will, to understand that sometimes reality isn't always, happy, that people don't always ride off in the sunset, and that bad things can happen to good people.
Now, kids, when this book was written, when he did visitations or they wrote him letters, really were demanding a sequel. We're asking what happened to this character, what happened to that character. There is a sequel to the book. But what does that sort of say to you about this notion that, you know, that we as readers want there to be something more? We don't want it to end with, devastation or a feeling of hopelessness, that even readers kind of demanded a little bit more from the author.
Yeah, Margaret Mitchell wrote a great book called Gone with the Wind, and a lot of her readers were very upset because the ending was up in the air. But sometimes in life, there isn't a clear conclusion to one's journey. And in this book, there's not a clear outcome because in 1974, no one knew what was going to happen. No one had seen this kind of atmosphere. They've never seen a vice president resign. They've never seen a president, become impeached or about to become impeached. Yeah. They've never seen the United States lose a war. And so things were really unclear. And so our wonderful author Cormier wants to say to the world that sometimes we have to just present the world as it is in a novel and say that there are, that life is unclear. And so he captures that. He celebrates it. He lets us understand that this is the way it's going to be, and there are no clear endings, happy endings.
So when you're contributing to this book, which is about the young adult literature canon, and why do you pick The Chocolate War, and how do you begin kind of putting that in context for the readers of this upcoming book?
Yeah, I'd like to thank Dr. Malo Huvera at the University of North Carolina in Wilmington. He has put together a series of books that explore young adult literature in a variety of contexts. For example, he's currently working on one that takes Shakespeare and pairs it with frequently taught young adult novels. He's also working on a project that I'm on board with, and what we take are frequently taught classic literature such as Lord of the Flies, The Crucible, The Great Gatsby, and then we pair them with more accessible young adult classics. The idea is that we don't throw struggling swimmers into the deep end of a pool. We let them practice in the shallow end. We let them build their muscles, and we let them gain confidence. We wouldn't want to give, like, a sixth grader War and Peace. It ranges over 1,200 pages. Mm-hmm. What we want to do is we want to give them things that they can that lets them grapple with important complex issues, gives them a chance to build their reading muscles, and then gain confidence in reading bigger things. And so in this this book, we take very common canonical works such as The Chocolate War and other young adult literature, and we match it up with contemporary critical theory, and we try to demonstrate how these works can be interpreted through a variety of lenses. The main target group for this would be like those in graduate school or in college English majors who are studying literary theory, and allow them to look at these really complex philosophical theories and apply them through the young adult literature, things that are a little bit more accessible.
All right, so tell me what literary theory you paired with The Chocolate War in your chapter.
I looked at historical materialism, which is also a form of Marxism. And the reason why I chose that is that The Chocolate War is represents history. It represents political power and the misuse of political power. It represents distrust in political institutions, the disintegration of traditional social conventions. And so I take this interpretive lens and I say, what can we read about the Chocolate War? What can we discern about the Chocolate War? And what can we learn about the Chocolate War through this lens? And when we do that, we see that Cormier is writing a metaphor about the events of the early 70s. We see him concerned with Watergate. We see him concerned about the failures of Vietnam. And then, of course, the distrust in political institutions. And throughout his book, you'll see that there's just a simple distrust of authority. Authority is abusive. And in my chapter, I go through and outline how those abuses occur. And that's where the whole bullying concept comes into play, because bullying is just a method of letting the oppressor oppress others.
And one of the things that's so interesting about the Chocolate War, too, is this notion of what you might call a psychological bullying versus just a beating, although there's violence, physical violence in the book as well. But talk a little bit, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this notion of, you know, the idea that it's you can hurt people more and longer if you are psychologically tormenting them versus just giving them a fist kind of beating.
Yeah, and in the book, there's this scene where one of the bullies wants to get the main character, his name is Jerry, he wants to get Jerry to commit violence. And so now this is the time period, so I'm trying to be sensitive to that. But essentially, the bully calls him gay, calls him homosexual. And that riles up Jerry, and it causes him to want to fight back. And there's this idea that, you know, obviously physical things are harmful, but sometimes you can get under someone's skin just by simply pushing their psychological buttons. And for Jerry, who's just a young kid, he's a freshman in high school, he's new to the school, his mother has just passed away, that's the button that's pushed, and it really motivates him to do things that he doesn't believe in. He doesn't believe in violence. He believes that everybody should be happy and do their own thing. And when he's called out as being a homosexual, he loses it, and he ends up into a boxing match and does things that he doesn't want to do.
Why are the mothers always dead in these books? That's what everybody asks me when they talk about children's literature. You know, and maybe you can address that, sort of the importance of removing that character from the story.
One of the wonderful things about young adult literature is that it tries to give models for how to become an adult to young adults. It is written for them, about them, and often by young adults, and it works through these issues. So sometimes in the stories, the parents have to get out of the way. You have to get them out of the way just so that you can let the young adult grow and realize and become the person that they're going to be become. And a classic example is S.E. Hinton's The Outsiders.
Right. This
is written by an author. Her name's really Susie. And she was a teenager when she wrote the book. She actually failed English class. And so she wrote this book about her hometown of Tulsa, and she wanted to explore some issues that she saw. And many of those were bullying issues, too. But she wanted to explore some issues, and she wanted to write about her experiences and her friends' experiences and share that with other adolescents. And so it becomes a nice path for adolescents to becoming an adult.
S.E. Hinton.
You know, you can't have adults do that. Sorry, go ahead.
S.E. Hinton was my first interview ever when I was in junior high, by the way.
You are so lucky. She's amazing.
I was in junior high, and they did one of those author, you know, it would be a Skype interview, but it was a phone interview, and there's like three of us that were chosen to interview her, and like we dressed up. And I remember wearing like this skirt and high heels and sitting in a room where you couldn't see her and having a list of questions. And I was probably in seventh grade and listening to S.E. Hinton talk on the phone about The Outsiders.
You know, I came to terms with her, first introduced to her in the seventh grade too. And, you know, she and Cormier are part of that first generation of young adult authors who take the literature and say, you know what, it's not just going to be inferior literature for boys or girls that just is fluff. They're going to have deep, complex issues, and they're going to connect with them. And, you know, she wrote that book in the 1960s, and there are people today who get tattoos that say, "Stay gold, pony boy."
Right.
It's a meaningful book, you know, decades later.
Yeah.
And that's what's wonderful about these books, is that they can communicate to young adults and adults and make us happy and sad all at once.
Yeah. And we carry them with us forever in many ways.
Yeah.
Tell us when people can get this latest book about young adult literature.
This book is available on Amazon. And it's a wonderful book. It's a book, again, that it's designed to help people who use literary criticism take these really complex ideas like psychoanalytic criticism, Freudian criticism, Marxist criticism, deconstructionism, take these really complex ideas and apply them to some of our favorite books like, you know, The Outsiders or The Chocolate War. There's a whole variety of these.
Yeah.
So it's designed to do that. And you can find it on Amazon or other retailers like Barnes & Noble.
Sure.
And it just came out. not too long ago.
Well, congratulations. I look forward to reading it. Will Sewell is with Dakota State University. Thank you so much for being here with us today from Madison.
Thank you for the time. I appreciate it.